98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo talk with the decision maker from the Coyotes front office. Now,
Thursday at 3 o'clock, that is when we get to talk to a Coyotes decision maker. And today, Bill Armstrong, the general manager of the Coyotes, is sitting in the seat, taking our questions and talking Coyotes hockey with us here on the Burns and Gambo show as he joins us on the 72 Sold Sports Line. Bill, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it very much.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys.
Bill, I'll just get this one out of the way. I know you can't really comment on the situation and the story about possibly playing at ASU, but I will ask you, do you expect that you'll have a resolution pretty soon as to where your hockey team will play next season?
I believe so. I think it's getting down to the point where it's getting to the point where I think we'll find a resolution here sooner rather than later.
Good, good. All right. One of the things we want to talk about is just the tremendous prospect pool that you guys have with the great draft pick you made of Dylan Gunther with the Edmonton Oil Kings. You've got a bunch of guys in Tucson with the Roadrunners, and you got some guys at ASU, including Josh Doan and somebody at I think the Italian kids at Harvard. How often are you getting a chance to keep an eye on the top prospects in the organization?
Well, it's a great question because, you know, we've got them all over the world. You know, we've got them in Russia, you know, and, you know,
Chicago, Providence.
Yeah. Like, and we have meetings, you know, every 2 weeks. And the good news nowadays is that you've got analytics, so you can dig into the exact ice time that the player's playing, you know, his effectiveness during the ice time, what situations does he need to improve. And you also got, you know, your development guys working with them, and they're watching a ton of video. Plus, they're going in to see them live. Plus, we're flying our skating coaches, you know, our nutritionists and our strength guys around to see these guys. So they're constantly getting attention, and they're giving you feedback at the same time. So nowadays in today's world, we're very in touch with our prospects. You know, it's on a weekly basis that we learn about what they've done, and you keep tabs. And obviously, the special ones you know, you keep a little bit closer watch on there just to see what they're doing.
No, it's true. When you start to look at, you know, Landry and Fedotov and Ratti and some of the guys are just so far away, I would imagine it's a lot of film, right? I'm sure you get a lot of film on what these guys are doing.
Yeah, exactly. And you have a really good idea and understanding of what they're doing. That way, when they do show up, you know, and they come into your development camp, you know, you can guide them in what they need to work on. And at the same time, you know, you can put them in situations where they're playing in your rookie camp, you know, in good situations to, you know, to see what they can do and with the right type of player surrounding them. But, in today's world, it's great. I mean, we have a really good understanding of who the player is and what they've accomplished in the league that they were in.
It was a long road trip for you guys. It's been a week or so, 10 days since you guys were last at home. The road trip got off to a good start with the win over the Devils. How, for you guys being at home, getting back to home, what kind of charge are you going to get out of being back after a long trip like that? That didn't end particularly well, as certainly as good as it started.
Yeah, it was an interesting road trip because our first game, you know, we ended up found a way to win against Jersey, and we came into the game against Gambo's team against the mighty powerful New York Islanders.
Excuse me, four-time Stanley. I make Bernsey say it. I'm going to make the four-time Stanley Cup champion Islanders, who just we lost Clark Gillies.
I know. Well, what a classy man, too, classy captain, and you know, just a good man. I didn't know him personally, but just some other people that did, and just. The way he conducted himself, he was one of the great ones there with the Islanders. But when we played them, we weren't close. That was a game that they controlled from start to finish. But you know, the two other games we played on the road trip with the Rangers, I felt was, you know, probably one of our better games. Or you know, we just fell short a little bit in the goaltending area. You know, we had them. We played extremely well in the first part, and you know, pretty much halfway through that game. And you know, same thing with Pittsburgh. We came in there and played a hell of a game. We were up, you know, in the third period and 4 minutes into it, and then you know, again, you know, I'd have to say that we just fell short in that one area of goaltending. I felt that we could have made a couple saves to keep us in the game, and you know, that was disappointing. But our team has played well in the last two, and you know, we've played some hot teams of late with the Rangers and Pittsburgh, and now we're going against one of the hottest teams in the NHL, the Bruins. So it should be a good matchup for us.
Yeah, I was fortunate to have met Gillies a couple of times. Boy, his fights with Dave Schultz of the Flyers were just so legendary. But, you know, back in those days, those guys were great, whether it was Tinelli or Trottier or Gillies. Those guys used to come to the rink where we played and spend some time talking to the kids and everything and giving some pointers and tips. They were so popular. I used to wear the number 5 Denny Potvin jersey to school all the time. But that was my guy. And Jean Potvin, you remember Jean Potvin?
Yeah,
that was Denny's brother. But those guys were always great, and Gillies was just such a class act. So it was just tough to, as a fan of that team for so long, it was tough to hear the news that he passed away at such a young age.
Yeah, and they've done a great job in that organization also with their new rink. It's a beautiful, beautiful rink, and they put it in a nice spot too. So it's going to make that franchise even stronger. So
I want to talk to you about Clayton Keller, because, you know, here's a guy tied up to a long-term contract for a lot of money, and there was a lot of doubts about him, you know, last year and even the year before, and he's an all-star this year, and he's been much better this season. I mean, maybe it's a coaching thing, but something seemed to have clicked with Keller. What have you noticed about him?
Well, he's right from the get-go. He came into camp, and he was bigger and stronger. It took him a little while to get going and to kind of grasp what coach wanted from him, but I think our coaching staff, have done a good job, just putting him in great situations to succeed. And I think Kel has felt the confidence from the coaching staff, and, you know, he's really playing the best hockey I've ever seen him play. And I still feel there's still room to grow with him too. He's a tremendous talent, and he has embraced, the culture of working harder and just, you know, playing a harder game. And you can tell when he comes to see him play, he's always got the puck, you know. It's because he's working on both sides of it, and he certainly is involved, and he's been able to cash in and help us offensively.
Bill Armstrong, general manager of the Coyotes, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Talk a little bit about the play of Nick Schmaltz lately. It seems like you've gotten a little more production out of that position, and that has helped solidify things in that regard.
Yeah, Nick got off, it's interesting with Schmaltz because he got off to a slow start, he's found his game, that line of Keller and Boyd and Schmaltz. And I do credit, Travis Boyd, the unsung hero on that line. He's found a way to really contribute and have one of his best years in the NHL. And out of nowhere, he's been a warrior for us and just plays so hard. And, he's really helped Schmaltz find his game too. Schmaltz got moved to the wing there, and that line is just flying right now. They found some kind of chemistry, and it's been a pleasant surprise. But Schmaltz has really taken his game to a new level on the last couple of games that he's played. He's just really used his skill to create some offense, and we need that. And he's one of those guys that for us to be successful in the future, he's got to continue to progress and keep making strides and learning to play on both sides of the puck. And when he gets his offensive chances, he's got to finish.
You got a great opportunity for the fans to see this young team play over the next few days. You got Boston and Buffalo back-to-back Friday, Saturday. You've got Calgary on Wednesday. So talk a little bit about playing at home after that long road trip.
Well, it's nice to come home. The first thing you notice is when you get home is that – you can feel that nice warm Arizona air. After feeling that cold New York air, and you realize, hey, it's home, it's time to get to work, and this is a good place to play hockey. You get your day, when you're battered and bruised, to heal up and go for a nice little walk and feel that warm sunshine on your body. There's nothing better, and come back to the rink the next day. It's truly a privilege to play hockey here in the desert because of the off days that you get. It's great. It's a great environment to play and to raise your family here. And, I know our players love it, and they're going to respond by, embracing the new culture that our coaches have brought. And, one of the things that I love about this team is that minus the Vegas game, we've showed up to work every single game.
Back-to-back home games coming up this weekend against Boston on Friday, against Buffalo on Saturday. Bill, good luck in those games. We'll talk to you very soon. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
You got it. Bill Armstrong, general manager of the Coyotes, joining us on the 72 Sold Sports Line. Get your price at 72sold.com. Be ready to see your favorite breweries again as the Arizona Strong Beer Festival returns on February 19th at Bell Bank Park in Mesa. Tickets are on sale now. You can win a pair by visiting the contest page at arizonasports.com. If you watch the games, it's no secret the Suns pass the eye test when it comes to being the best team in the NBA. The numbers, some of the numbers are crazy about the Phoenix Suns this year, and we'll go over some of the better ones next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
Give the Suns some free points. Devin Booker cans the free throw. Give him 40 points on the night. Booker's 16th 40-point game of his career, which is a new Suns franchise record, outdoing Amari Stoudemire.
We're going to talk about numbers here with the Phoenix Suns, winning again last night against the Utah Jazz. Best record in the NBA still. Best start in franchise history still. I just had to start, Gambo, with that Booker play-by-play. His 16th game of 40 or more points, passing Amari Stoudemire. And if we're going to have a conversation about numbers, I do think we have to start the conversation by reminding everybody yet again that Devin Booker has now had more 40-point games in his career than any other member of this organization, and he's 25 years old.
Wow.
25 years old. And yeah, under contract here for three more years, and God willing, he's going to be here a lot longer than that. To think that he's, and I know a lot of those games came on teams that weren't very good, that needed Devin Booker to put up a ton of shots. But still, you're 25 years old, and nobody, and it's not like this organization has been in the gutter for 50 years, right? Nobody in the history of this organization has more 40-point games than you do, and you're 25.
I know. Just incredible. I mean, he's been such a great draft pick, such a great player for this organization, and it's, you know, it's so great to see him, you know, rewarded with the success when so many others bail, when things aren't going well. He stuck through some tough times. Man, you go find me a star that had it as bad as him. There might be some, but how many guys that are star players had it as bad as Devin Booker did with those first 5 years here in this organization, man, winning 20 games a year.
Yeah.
The stuff that went on, like, it was, you know, guys bailing, and it was ugly. It was bad. It was ugly. Maybe nobody would have ever faulted him if he would have said, listen, get me the hell out of here. But he stayed, stuck around, signed the contract extension, here for the long haul. It's nice to see him rewarded for staying.
It is, and I think that's the rare category that he's in. There have been other stars who have been stuck in bad situations. But if we sat here and tried to make a list of guys, of stars who were stuck in bad situations, who didn't ask out, who didn't hit the eject button, who didn't go to their agent or go to the GM, I demand a trade, I want out of here. I mean, hell, lesser players than Devin Booker have done that with the Phoenix Suns over the years. The Markieff Morris and the Goran Dragic's of the world who asked out. The Eric Bledsoe, I'm not at a hair salon. I think, Gambo, you hit the nail on the head. That's what put Devin Booker in this rarefied air, is that through all the struggles, through all the times where he could have asked out, all of the moments where we were scared to death he was going to ask out, he stuck because he knew that if he was able to do what he's doing now, he would be legendary in this. And he's well on his way to that if he's not there already. We were having I know you're doing the show from home right now. We were having a pre-show discussion about Booker and what he stands to gain in the history of this organization if he leads the team to an NBA championship. Can you imagine? He immediately becomes more popular than Charles Barkley. He becomes more popular than Steve Nash. He becomes the one. He's the guy. He becomes the face of the franchise in the history of the franchise because he will have done what the others couldn't accomplish. And he stayed around to do it when nobody would have blamed him if he wanted out.
But who, I mean, listen, everybody, Barkley played for other teams. Nash played for other teams. Amari played for other teams. Sean played for other teams. I mean, you know, I think the only one, you know, is there anybody you could think of that didn't play for another team that was a Sun star? I mean, there's a chance Book ends his entire career here. That would be unique. It would be great if it happens. I would love that. I think there's a chance of it. But all those other guys that you're talking about, great players, but they played on other teams.
Yeah, I mean, KJ started his career with the Cavs, and you know, Marley hopped around. He was in Miami, and he was in Cleveland, and not there aren't many. The Walter Davis, I'd have to go look back at his career. I don't know if he played with it. I think he played with Denver at the end, if I remember right. But you're right, there aren't many. And I don't know if he's going to be here for his entire career. I'm just saying, if he becomes the one who delivers a championship, he instantly becomes the most popular player in the history of the organization. And this organization has had a crap ton of popular players. I mean, a ton of popular players. And he becomes number one on the list if he leads him to a championship.
Yeah, if he does, he does. He becomes, you know, he was, because he Barkley came here to join a good team. When Nash came here, Nash joined a good team, right? He was with Dallas.
Yes.
So he came here and he joined a good team. You know, the situation with Booker is just so different because he was on crap for years. It was just garbage. It was embarrassing. It was humiliating to watch that basketball team play. They were a laughing stock.
Yeah.
And he had to endure that and play through that. So Ed Barkley came and joined a good team, and they were in a, what, were they in a championship a year later?
Yes, they were in a championship the year later.
I mean, Nash came, and they had, like, those guys were set. They had those guys. Marion was here. Amari was here. So Nash joined a good team. Like, it's so different for Book. It's just, it's so different. You can't compare him to me.
Yeah, here are the numbers that we promised. The Suns are 38-9. That's the best start in franchise history after 47 games. They are against 500 below 500 teams, so against the losing teams in the NBA. They are 19-2 so far this year. That stat tells us that they beat the bad teams, which is what every good team should do, right? You beat
right,
the bad
teams.
You
got to beat the teams you're supposed to beat. You're great at it.
They, against 500 or better teams, the Suns are 19-7. That is the best in the league. So against the good teams, the Suns are the best team in the NBA. That tells a different story, but one that's pretty significant too, right?
I of course, yeah. I mean, listen, if you do your job and beat the teams that you're supposed to, and then you go 500 against, you know, all the good teams in the league, you're going to have a good season. I mean, you're going to have a very good season. You're going to go to the playoffs. You're going to be expected to do well. They're beating everybody. I mean, that record, that win, I don't know what's that win percentage? Do we know? I'm trying to see if it was on there.
19-7?
The 18-7, yeah. See, that's per 19-7 versus 500 teams or better. Like, that's to me, that's a really good winning percentage. That stands out. Like, to me, that stands out more than the 19-2 versus below 500 teams.
73%.
Oh, man. Okay, think about that for a second, right? Now, when you just look at it, 19-2 stands out, right? 19-2 versus below 500 teams, 19-7 versus 500 teams or more. They got a winning percentage over 700? Against teams that are 500 or better?
Yeah.
That's remarkable. That's remarkable.
Maybe even more remarkable than that. They have an even better winning percentage in these games in the clutch. They're 17-3 in clutch games this year. They are winning games at an 85% clip when the game in the final 5 minutes is within 5 points. 85%, Gambo.
I remember talking to James Jones about, like, yesterday, like, okay, come on, man. Regular season doesn't mean anything. You guys are going out there and kicking everybody's ass every night. Like, why? Like, it's not supposed to happen like that. You guys are supposed to have some games and where you just, the guys aren't ready. The guys don't want to play that hard. I mean, you played 3 and 4 nights. It's a back-to-back. But, man, it's just not that affects this team. I mean, every time you think they could be affected by a game, they're not. They just go out there and they win basketball games. I mean, in some roundabout way, they have found the ability for them to make all of these games matter. Even though they really don't, they've found a way to make these games matter.
That's a really good point. You can text us your thoughts on the Suns. FanDuel text line is open for you. As always, you can text us at 620-620 right now. It's a proven formula so far this year. Devin Booker starts and Chris Paul finishes. What kind of an impact is Chris having in the fourth quarters of these games? That is yet another remarkable facet of this team, and we'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
Last night, Phoenix Suns, 105-97 winners over the Utah Jazz, their eighth straight victory, and we were talking about numbers in the last segment of the show. Phoenix Suns, the first team in NBA history to have two unbeaten months on the road in the same season. They went 8-0 on the road in November. They went 8-0 on the road in January. Nobody's ever done that before. We're just piling on right now with the Suns and everything that they're accomplishing. And at the center of it is, of course, their two superstars, Devin Booker, who just went berserk last night with 43 points, and then Chris Paul, who did the fourth quarter thing again last night, and after the game talked about the fact that they only had nine guys available to them, and it just doesn't seem to matter that much.
We knew that's all we needed, you know, and it might have been nine guys dressed, but Jay was over there, campaign, you know, guys still over here supporting him. We just like that, you know what I mean? Like, you can't predict the future and what's going to happen as far as the playoffs and all that, but man, when you play all these games and spend this time together, you got to have fun. You got to have fun. And when you've been around a long time, it's not always like that. So it's cool.
First time in his career that he has scored 15 or more points in the fourth quarter in consecutive games. Like I said, Gambo, we're piling on with the numbers after last night's game.
I know. I mean, you know, the list of firsts after this season's over is going to be incredible. Look, having fun is beating everybody's ass every night, right? That's how you have fun. You win. Who has fun when they lose? Anybody have fun when they lose at anything?
No.
Winning is fun. Winning is fun. And then when he's talking about having fun, yeah, you're having fun because, man, you guys go to the bat, you win. All you do is win. They don't lose. They're the only team left in the NBA that has single digits in losses. They're so far ahead. Look how far ahead they are of the Utah Jazz, the fourth seed in the West. Look at the lead they've opened up on these other teams, you know, in the West. Golden State's hanging around, but I mean, I don't know how much longer that Golden State will be able to hang around. But, you know, you look at the three and the four. I mean, it's so far ahead of everybody.
They are. In fact, I'm looking at it right now. And if you're going by losses, okay, the Phoenix Suns, still the only team in the NBA single digits, as you mentioned. They've got nine losses on the year. The next closest team, the Golden State Warriors, they've got 13. So they're four back in that regard. After that, I mean, literally after that, the next closest team in terms of losses is eight away. The Memphis Grizzlies have 17 losses. The Heat have 17. The Bulls have 17. Eight losses away.
Yeah, there's like that. They're not catching them. They can't catch them. The Suns are one or two in the West. That's it. Golden State's the four in the loss column. But if that gets to seven, this thing's that's going to be over. I mean, the season's moving quickly, my friend. It's moving quickly, and I just don't know that, you know, they might run away with the Western Conference.
Yeah, they might. I'm trying. Okay, here it is. I was looking for this, trying to find this, and I just came up with it. Chris Paul in the fourth quarter this year. All right, because last night was one of those classic games. But I don't know about you. I was watching last night's game, and I thought, man, Chris Paul looks tired. Chris, like he was joking the other night about, hey,
oh,
man, I got hooped.
Fooled.
Yeah, totally. He said after the Utah game on Monday, I'd go hoop tomorrow. I don't care if I played 40 minutes. I'd go play right now. And then Booker made the joke about him being a vegan. I did, Gambo. I got fooled. For three quarters, I was totally fooled because I thought, oh, he's gassed. He's tired. He doesn't have his legs. His jump shot's got no oomph to it. And then just as if it were set to a clock, as if it were an alarm set on his iPhone. Fourth quarter? Yeah, okay, I'm here. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to hoop,
right.
Ready to ball.
And
it was,
you need me?
Yeah, you need me?
You.
Okay, yeah.
You need me? I mean, all of those, you know, look at the big shots that he made in the fourth quarter of that basketball game. It's what makes him so, I'm again, dumbfounded by his ability at his age to play at this level, at this high of a level. But you go, you know, right after they had an 8-0 run, it's 92-90. Who scores the basket for the Suns? Chris Paul. 94-90. He scores that big basket right there. Right, Whiteside has a dunk. It's 96-94. They're back within two. Who scores the next basket? Chris Paul, pull-up jumper, 98-94. I mean, it's just he's I love Devin Booker. You can make an argument who's their MVP, and you can argue it either way. But at the end of the game, man, I want Chris Paul's elbow jumper. Yeah. I want Chris Paul taking those big shots more than anybody else on that team. That's not a knock on anybody else. It's just that I think he is just at such a different level. All those other guys are great. Any other team would love to have those guys on the Suns. You'd love to have Devin Booker taking your last shots.
Of course.
Right now, I defer to Chris Paul on last shots.
In the first quarter this season, he's shooting 42% from the floor. In the second quarter, it goes up to 49.5%. In the third quarter, he's 46%. In the fourth quarter so far this season, Chris Paul is shooting 53.5% from the floor in the fourth quarter of these
games.
What
was the first quarter?
The first quarter was 42%.
So 42 to, and what was the highest quarter after that? The third?
The 46 in the third. 46. Yeah, that was after, yeah. So
42 to 46 for three quarters, and then he goes up to 53 in the fourth.
Yep, just like that.
Just clutch, right? It's just clutch. There are guys that want the ball at the end of games, and there are guys that don't. He's that guy. I want the ball. In any sport, he's the guy that wants to be up with the bases loaded and a 3-2 count in Game 7 of the World Series. He's that guy.
Yeah.
He's the guy that wants to be, I got 80 yards to go, and we're down by four, and I got to score a touchdown with a minute and a half left on the clock in football. He's the guy that wants to lead his team down the court. That's him.
Yeah.
Right? He's the alpha. He's the alpha. He's that guy. That's his mindset. He wants to take over games. Doesn't matter what sport it is. He's that guy.
Yeah, after the game, he talked about the trust that he's building with Booker and the other teammates.
Yeah, just like with any team, like you said, it was a lot of trial and error. And then you got to build that trust. You only build that trust by playing together, playing in games together. You know, if he was in a game and I'm out of game, and you know what I mean? The fact that we didn't log a lot of these minutes together, I think it not only builds trust with us, but with our teammates. And it's nothing like being out there and everybody on your team, like, expecting you and telling you, like, all right, now go to work.
Right.
Go to work. So it's cool.
He's sitting next to Devin Booker when he's saying these words. And one thing I've noticed about this team, too, and this isn't like some brand new revelation or anything, it's real obvious from watching them on the floor, and it's real obvious watching them off the floor, that Devin Booker and Chris Paul really, truly, genuinely enjoy being around each other every single minute they possibly can. It's just there's something about the way they interact with each other when they're on the floor or when they're doing a post-game press conference. It's the reason why they're the best backcourt in the NBA. It's the reason why both of them are having such success with each other. There does seem to be a real genuine appreciation of, I get to play with this dude. No, I get to play with this dude. And it's them together that has made this magic that they've been able to create in the year that they've been together. It's barely been a year that they've been together.
There are guys that are not going to be here for long. I mean, I don't know that Elfrid Payton and Ish Wainwright and Jalen Smith and some of these guys are long for the Phoenix Suns. I don't know, but I would guess that they're not here for a long time. But man, the ability for those guys to say that they played with Chris Paul down the road, the ability for them, when he's in the Hall of Fame, when you talk about the greatest point guards ever, the ability to say that they played with him, just like guys saying they played with Tom Brady, man, just like that. Like, you know, that's something that's special for those players to be a part of that. And for point guards, I mean, you know, whether it's Campaign or Elfrid Payton, you're only going to get better. I mean, you're not going to get worse being around that guy. You're only going to get better from being around him and learning.
Yeah. The golf tournament, hailed as the People's Open, returns to the TPC Scottsdale as the Waste Management Phoenix Open tees off on February 7th, and it runs through February 14th. Head to the contest page at arizonasports.com for your chance to win tickets, plus one lucky winner will win greenskeeper passes as well. It's almost the weekend, which means it's almost time for the conference championship games. How they even try to top what happened last weekend, I don't know. But one of the things we're excited to see, a matchup of two of the premier young quarterbacks in this league, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, the AFC championship game. We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
Of course, being an NFC West market, we're going to be super focused on the Rams and the 49ers. You can kind of understand why, division rivals of the Arizona Cardinals. But Gambo, as we go into conference championship weekend, this weekend, the two games that are on tap, the AFC, it kind of paints a different picture than the one we're getting painted for us in the NFC. In the AFC, you're talking about a young established superstar quarterback in Patrick Mahomes versus a young, becoming very close to being established superstar quarterback in Joe Burrow in a matchup that we very well could see these two quarterbacks and maybe a couple of others in the AFC battle for supremacy in that conference for literally the next decade and a half. I mean,
remember a few, like a month or so ago, I did a topic on, like, I'm really glad that Kyler Murray's in the NFC because
yes.
all the great young quarterbacks are in the AFC.
I do remember that, yes.
Yeah, I am glad that Kyler Murray's in the NFC. I mean, you would be lucky to be in the NFC compared to the AFC. I mean, the talent level of quarterback in the AFC is just so much better. It's so far superior. When you look at the best young quarterbacks in each conference, there's no comparison. There's no comparison. It's all AFC. It's Mahomes. It's Burrow. It's Lamar. It's Trevor Lawrence could be really good. Like the best talent is there in that Justin Herbert. The best conference is the best talents in the AFC.
Yeah, I mean it's almost like I'm looking at it, like every single division in the AFC. Okay, the Bills. Josh Allen, he could rule over that division for a decade. The AFC North, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, they could be battling in that division. But how do you feel if you're the Steelers right now? And Ben Roethlisberger, who just announced his retirement this morning, officially, by the way. You're the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you're looking
happy.
You're happy that you're moving on, but now you got to go find a quarterback for the first time in two decades. And you have to do it when you're sharing a division with Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson, right? That's a tough ask. The AFC South is still a little, okay, we got to wait and see. Ryan Tannehill's good. I don't think he's elite, but he's good. Trevor Lawrence, you mentioned him. We all expect him to be good, but it hasn't happened yet. The Texans, maybe they have Deshaun Watson, maybe they don't. And the Colts, you know, they have Carson Wentz, and he's just okay. But the AFC West, oh my God, look at the AFC West. You got Mahomes. You got Justin Herbert. You've got Derek Carr, who's a very good quarterback. Hell, the Denver Broncos might have Aaron Rodgers when it's all said and done. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but that's obviously the rumor. It's been the rumor. Can you imagine that division if your four quarterbacks are Mahomes, Herbert, Carr, and Aaron Rodgers? Good luck, man.
Wow.
Good luck in that. And that's the AFC. Whereas the NFC, you're right. The NFC, there's not nearly that kind of young star power to grab in the NFC.
No, you got guys you just don't know about.
Right.
You know, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, Jalen Hurts. Like, you think, you look at those quarterbacks, like, they may be good, they might not be good. They haven't proven themselves yet that they're good. So, like, there is young quarterbacks there that we don't know about yet. And listen, some people may say put Kyler in that category, and that would be fair based on, you know, how he finished the season. And then even Dak, like, I'm not Dak's okay to me. I like Dak. He's decent, but he's not an act level, man. He's not in that level of the other guys you just mentioned in the AFC.
No, he's not at all. And I mean, if Brady retires this year, if Aaron Rodgers moves on and goes somewhere in the AFC, then that leaves the NFC so wide open when it comes to its quarterbacks. That's half the reason why Sean Payton left the New Orleans Saints. I know he was burned out. I know he was ready to kind of recharge his batteries. His quarterback situation is all jacked up in New Orleans. I mean, nobody knows who's going to be their quarterback moving forward with the mess that they've got. So it is. It's like night and day comparing the two conferences. So now circle it back to this AFC Championship game. Here's Mahomes, who has established himself as one of, if not the best young quarterback in the National Football League. He's sensational. We saw it last week. And here's Joe Burrow, who's got all the confidence and all the swag in the world. That dude just absolutely, totally believes in himself. He's got Ja'Marr Chase to throw the ball to. You can tell they've got a thing. He's got a suspect offensive line, and that's going to be a little bit of a problem.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? He was sacked nine times last week against the Tennessee Titans. There's one thing that's going to undo Joe Burrow. It's that, right?
Well, yeah. I'm going to try to find something here in a quick amount of time, but I did something on just how that offensive line was put together. You'd be shocked at what they at how they put they put nothing into that offensive line, like absolutely nothing. When you look at the guys, okay, here it is. I found it.
That was quick, by the way. Hold on, that was quick.
You know what?
For you, that's some kind of a record, digging through your own. Was that a handy-dandy notebook special, or did you have that online somewhere?
You know, it was simple. You know how many emails I sent you on Monday?
Six.
Six emails I sent you Monday,
six
preparing for the show.
Emails.
Six.
Yes.
And I was able to label four. I just did my email differently. Instead of putting one email together, here's a 49ers email. Here's a Rams email. Here's a Bengals email, and here's a Chiefs email. And in my Bengals email, I've got all of these notes on the Bengals, like all of the stuff I put together on the Bengals. And one of them was how they put their starting offensive line together. So listen to this. Left tackle, 11th overall. Left guard, vets minimum, former unrestricted free agent. Offensive center, another undrafted free agent, re-signed for $6.8 million. Right guard, 180th overall. Right tackle, former 202nd overall pick claimed on waivers. So let me go over four of these guys. Vets minimum, former undrafted free agent. Left guard. Offensive center, undrafted free agent. Right guard, 180th overall. Right tackle, 202nd overall.
It's nuts.
They didn't spend anything. That's why they got sacked nine. You wonder why he got sacked nine times? They're not investing anything in the offensive line.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. Yep. They're gonna have to change that, obviously. But you can see why, despite that, how can you not believe in what you have there in Cincinnati? Because Joe Burrow, everything about that guy just says star. And that's,
you want to have some fun? Go look at the last game the Bengals played against the Chiefs. The Bengals, it was late in the season. It was in Cincinnati, and the Bengals won 34-31. So 34-31, you know, close game, but Cincinnati pulled it out in the fourth quarter. You look at the game Ja'Marr Chase had against, if I'm Kansas City, I'm freaking worried. Look at the game Ja'Marr Chase had against Kansas City a few weeks ago.
What week was that? 17?
It was week 17.
There it is. I got it. Yep, I got it right here.
Just don't look at anything else except Ja'Marr Chase.
He was targeted 12 times. He had 11 receptions. He had 266 yards. He had 3 touchdowns. I remember that game now.
He had 266 yards.
I remember watching that game thinking, out of principle alone, I might have to order a Ja'Marr Chase jersey and represent it, because
in one game,
he was incredible. And I remember that game now, because there was like a third and 27 that I think he converted against the Chiefs. And I was like, come on, man, seriously? Like, he's making crazy catch after crazy catch after crazy catch. And oh, by the way, it wasn't for a touchdown, but there was a third and 27, I think, in that game. And he converted that too while he was at it.
He had 266 yards receiving and 3 touchdowns in one game against Kansas City.
Eric, what you got?
Well, I just wanted to say how incredible it is that Ja'Marr Chase is so good that nobody cares that the Bengals didn't draft an offensive lineman with what Gambo just went through and Joe Burrow getting sacked 9 times. People still love Ja'Marr Chase. That's how good he is.
And that's a really good point, because during the draft, it was like, what are you doing taking Ja'Marr Chase? You need an offensive lineman in the worst kind of way. What are you doing spending frivolously on wide receivers in the draft when you need an offensive lineman? Well, I think it kind of worked out.
But they hit it because he is that. There's a lot of good wide receivers in every draft. There's nobody like this in every draft. He's different. He's just different. He has the LSU connection with Burrow too. But there's like every year there's great receivers. There's great receivers all the time. But you got to build your line. You got to pass rush. You got to have an offensive line. But this kid was so damn special, so special that they took him 5th overall. And he had one of the greatest seasons that any rookie wide receiver ever had.
Yeah. Only 9 active players, and that was not a problem for the Suns last night, led by their duo of Swish and Dish, as Eric is starting to call them. We look back at D-Book's historic performance, Chris Paul's clutch heroics, and yet another win against the Jazz. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.